Vanessa, thank you. And thanks for going there in prayer together. I'm going to speak perhaps a lot more briefly than sometimes, but more briefly than what is normal for me, in hopes that we're going to be talking and sharing, and we're all doing this this work together today. Today, the climactic work of Holy Week came to a beautiful resolution as we celebrated the resurrection of Jesus. And this morning, over 300 of us gathered outside in Fairmount Park and worshiped as the sun came up. So just don't brag, but did anybody get a nap today? Just a little okay. Does anybody wake up that early every day? And then a few of you, and you're like, naps, huh? I remember when I was that weak. And now the heroes who do it every day, I commend you. And that's hard because I didn't get a nap. I did wake up earlier than I usually do, and it's hard. So this morning we woke up. We went through the beginning. We were using Mark for all Holy Week. We went through the beginning part of that resurrection story. So we're not going to recap. We're not going to do that over. Give you the briefest of recaps. But we're going for the resurrection part two. What happens next in Mark chapter 16. So we woke up with a few Marys, the mother of James and John, Mary Magdalene, and Salome, who came to an empty tomb trying to, in their own way, to go and anoint Jesus' dead body. And I say that in sort of this, in their own way, because their plan was really, their plan had a lot of issues. Like when they arrived there, they were like, oh yeah, there's this great huge stone in front of it. What are we going to do about that? And I was like, we didn't even consider that because we were so fixated on this, even what we were doing with Jesus, even when Jesus was dead. And the angel explained that Jesus had risen from the dead, the stone was already rolled away, and that they needed to go tell the disciples and Peter the news that Jesus was going ahead of them, and Jesus was alive, and was going ahead to meet them in Galilee. So we need to hear, like I keep saying, with many voices, just three now, because there's just three little paragraphs of the story that I want to look at together. So if you want, three of you at different points wouldn't mind, just stand up so we all see whose voice it is, because it's a little confusing sometimes, and read a paragraph. There'll be three of them.
Someone else, if you would.
Afterward, Jesus appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking in the country. 13. He returned and reported it to the rest, but they did not believe them either.
13 is my favorite number. So. I don't mind. Thanks, Nina. One more? Thanks, Cameron. So each of those had a significant weird thing in it. Did you find them? You know, Jesus appearing in other forms, you know, the seven demons. Kind of Jesus shows up, and it seems like the first thing he says to his bunch of friends is rebuke, you know, this kind of hard Jesus. And the end of it is even weirder. That we're so weird that you may want to read it on your own if you don't remember how this chapter, even the book of Mark, finishes up with this rendition of what we know as the Great Commission. Go into all of creation and make disciples. Where I really want to get at is that I think we have a ton in common with these disciples, beyond just that we're working with some sort of Jesus connection at some level. There's one thing about them that I can't help but identify with is they are discouraged and they are committed to their discouragement. They are bummed out and they're gonna be bummed out. Jesus is dead. This didn't go as they expected, as they planned, or as they wanted. God was seeming to let down their expectations again. This even in a week like Holy Week or on a day like the Resurrection Day, I too am vulnerable to discouragement. And it's one of those things that I get pricked with every once in a while, or that I don't think I'm looking for, but then once I start to feel a little bit discouraged, I realize, oh yeah, I am looking for that. And there's something about that that is very twistedly comforting to me. I know it, and I go more into it. You know what I'm talking about? This is like today, first of all, if you have a Facebook account, if any of you looked at it today, there's tons of stuff about Jesus, right? And some of them are really cool, and some of them are kind of like, okay, that's interesting about Jesus, you know? And the thing that was most interesting to me, though, is how many of my friends on there are not just not believers, but they're haters. And I was like, wow, I thought that Christians were the most arrogant people on the planet. But I have some friends who are like 19-year-old self-proclaimed atheists that are more arrogant than like any Christian I've ever met. And it's stuff about just how stupid all these Christians are and how stupid this idea of God is. And I was like, wow, I want to read more about this. And then there's a part of me, right? I'm all kind of high from this morning still, right? And I had brunch at Schumer's house. I was like, this is pretty ridiculous. You know, this is so good. And yet, even in the midst of that, and I said I'm a little tired too, so that makes me a little more vulnerable. But this goofball of a kid, sorry if you're, you know, 19-year-old self-proclaimed atheist and you're really arrogant, but like this goofball of a kid was really kind of getting into me, and I was like, man, good point. It is kind of like The Walking Dead, this whole Bible thing. And I was like, you know what, this kid watches way too many movies. You know, I thought I did. I no longer feel convicted. This kid does, like way more than me. And so even in this kind of week, even in this kind of day, I'm still finding myself having these commitments to discouragement. I find myself having this commitment towards scarcity, this commitment towards hanging on to my resentments. And it's such a weird thing that I do, but the more I've been talking, especially during Holy Week, I mean, all throughout Lent, you know, people seem to like get real spiritual and they start fasting and doing all these weird spiritual things that puts them in touch with God, and their problems come up. You know, and that's kind of hard, but it's really cool and good, especially once we get to this point of the resurrection. Hopefully we can even celebrate that, like, yeah, something is really happening and loosening up in me. But for me, sometimes I get so upset that even after the conversation changes, even after an hour or two, and the situation is generally alleviated, I still feel physically upset. I still have that anxiety and that tension, and I can't quite get over it yet. And sometimes it's with my most intimate friends or partners, and it's hard to connect through that. And it's hard to move from being discouraged to being reborn. And I think we're tempted to think that, especially on the Resurrection Day, the sunshine committee of the church is just out there blowing sunshine, you know, up everybody's rear end. And if you don't, like, snap to it, snap out of your depression, snap out of your anxiety, or snap out of your resentments, then something's really wrong with you. And you, like, there's some pressure that you should be, you know, the happiest one, you know. I just don't buy that lie. You know, I think that Jesus is coming in, is dying a brutal death, and is rising through this incredible process that is filthy. And the work that Jesus was doing over the last couple days that we're kind of walking with is incredible. But for us to get to our discouragement, I think like the disciples, there's a few different ways that Jesus is trying to work it out. Jesus is still trying really hard to get to you where you're at, to bring you into something, to bring you into a more whole process, a healing process. So Jesus didn't just show up to the disciples expecting that they already knew about the resurrection. You know, when the Marys and Salome get to the tomb, you know, and the angel's talking to them, Jesus doesn't just show up to the room with his friends and just be like, "Friends, why didn't you get out and do the right thing already? Why didn't you do enough? Why are you disappointing me?" And they're just like, "Whoa, Jesus, are you resurrected?" And, you know, like, and they're like confused and they're just like, "What is going on?" And you're mad? So you're resurrected, you're disappointed in me, and you're mad at me. And then some of you are even like, "Oh yeah, that's the God that I know. You know, that's the one, that's my God image that when I'm in the dark at night, you know, I'm kind of terrified of that." Even Jesus coming back with this sort of like, "Dude." You know, and Jesus only needs to say "dude" once. You know, like a lot of us, we say "dude," we're kind of like, "Dude, dude." Me with my children sometimes, I'm like, "Dude, dude, dude." You know, and it slows down and it gets quieter. And finally, if you just see my mouth moving with like, like on the inside, you got, you know, my kids know, like, that's get right, you know, time to get right with the old man. I usually don't get down to silent dude. But anyway, they're working with the same kind of stuff. You know, when Mary came to them, they didn't believe her. You know, maybe Jesus should show up then, right? Mary's a pretty special person. She's not really known for being a huge liar. You know, and her, the extent of her leadership roles, you know, we won't know. And probably, I think when we die and we're with Jesus, we'll get to know that in a better way. But we're not going to probably, you know, uncase these scrolls that realize how important she was. But I don't think they think that she's totally full of beans. But when she comes, they can't get out of their discouragement. They don't believe her because it's like, come on, you had an angelic vision? That's not good enough to bring me out of my mess. And I'm going to sit in my mess a little bit longer. And even when in some other form, Jesus appears to two of them, they come back and they're like, "No, seriously, we saw Jesus in another form." And I think some people are like, "See, why'd you have to qualify it with in another form? If you would have seen Jesus proper, then I would have went with you. If it would have happened according to the way I understand the world, then I could actually go with you. Until that happens, I'm discouraged. And I'm committed to it." You know, and when Jesus finally shows up, you know, he doesn't show up to make them feel bad. He doesn't show up to say, "Hey, I'm resurrected. You should feel guilty now, too. If you weren't ashamed before, oh boy, you should be now. Here I am, the shaming one." You know, it's really not what he's doing. But he has two other reasons. The first is to rebuke them. Rebuke. Do you even know what rebuke means? I thought I did. I looked it up on the Merriam-Webster thing just because I was like, I think what that word means is not actually what it means. And I'm so happy that I was right. Because the first definitions, of course, the one that you're familiar with, to criticize sharply. You know, and you're like, okay, I know that rebuke. You know, I know that one well. I even rebuke myself. How many, don't even show of hands, but just let my rhetoric go for a second. How many of you think that you are your own worst critic? You know, how many of you rebuke yourself more than anyone else could do? You know, that's probably true for like 0.001% of the population. When God does it, it feels way worse. You know, or the fear of God doing it, oh man, it's terrible. Or if somebody that you respect does it to you, that's worse, you know, for most of us. But here's the other definition for rebuke that's way cooler. To turn back. To turn someone back is to rebuke them. It doesn't even have a mean connotation. It doesn't even sound shaming. It doesn't sound guilt-producing. But it sounds directing. It sounds shepherding. Once you get into shepherding and directing, I'm kind of like, okay, this is more the Jesus that I've been working with for the last 15 years. Thank God that's in the Bible here too. He also shows up, the second reason, was to send them out. And this is our the scripture that we've been kind of doing it into the grave and into resurrection over the last few months or so and through Holy Week. But this is when Paul the Apostle writes this to Titus, he's helping him to get this larger process of how to talk about restoration and redemption, that God didn't go through this elaborate redemption process to make us look bad. God didn't go through this elaborate attempt at restoration because we were already so wonderful. Jesus came to turn us back to God and to send us out with generosity through grace. That kind of generous way that God's pouring out, it turns us back, and then he unleashes us in the world. So for me, I felt turning back on Wednesday night at the vigil that Leanne and Eric and Martha led. My Holy Week fatigue, it only took 2 days this year, you know, which, you know, hey, man, 2 days ain't bad, right? Some of you are like, oh, I didn't even go, you know, I hear you. You know, I feel like that too sometimes, but I made it two before I started being like, man, what am I even doing here? This is tedious. I'm tiring. My kids are old enough to drag along to everything now, so I'm dragging them along. Here we are, and it took me about 4 minutes of being at that vigil to actually get centered, and I was like, wow, I can get centered really fast during Holy Week. And I'm just kind of like, oh, yeah, I've been praying like a lot, you know, and in these groups. And it took me about 4 minutes to get centered and realize this, have this grace from God and just this sensation that I was right where God wanted me to be in that chair at that vigil. And that totally changed the trajectory of Holy Week for me. I feel sent out too. In this next season especially, I feel that we're being sent out to do something really special as a congregation. We are a special group of people that I adore and I admire in a lot of ways. Even our whole church, yeah, but our congregation especially right now is what I'm feeling particularly like we're being sent for something great. We've got something awesome going and a lot that's worthy of celebration. And we have a good number of people who are sort of on the fence with faith. And that's really great that we could even have a personal connection with them and not just, you know, tell them how weird, narcissistic, and arrogant they are as 19-year-olds or whatever, but we can actually be friends, you know, and be like, oh, okay, we can talk about your arrogance, but really, you know, we're working something out here. That's good that there's so many people that tell me that they're sort of on the fence, or how many people want to work out this relationship together with Jesus in a way that somebody from outside the faith can all together understand. I feel sent to try and help give people an opportunity to say yes to this opportunity that we have right now, and to do it in a way that is stretching and growing, that feels good, that builds the body, and that makes a difference for people who are outside of their understanding of what it is to be part of the church, to be a disciple, to find people who want to say yes to being a disciple, find people who want to say yes to being a partner. And I'm looking for them. This meeting tomorrow night, I'm looking for people like that. You know, this meeting Friday night, this big potluck thing, there's going to be food there. But it's not about food. It's about we're looking for partners who really want to say yes to this. And then I say, do it. I do it. You know, and Martha and I are down. You know, it's fun. You know, and it's a really generative thing. So here's where it's time for you to talk. The people around you, you've already met, I hope that you got to pass the peace to them. But form little circles of three or four. Don't go more than four. I know that you're tempted to, now that I said it twice, that you really want to do it. Okay, you can have more than four if you really want to. But not everybody gets a chance to talk. In that little group, you don't have to share, but at least please say your name so people know who you are, and maybe say something about what your experience today, or maybe where you want to talk about where you're committed to your own scarcity, your own discouragement, or your own resentments. But at the end, I hope someone will share about what they heard, because I want to, this I hope works it out in a sort of, these are the things I'm really hoping that you'll talk about, are these basic, where is Jesus coming and turning you back this season? Did that happen during Lent? Did that happen during Holy Week? Is it happening gradually over the last 5 or 50 years? How is that being turned back working for you? And also something about how you might, just choose one of these. You might be feeling sent out, or you think we're being sent out. And if those are too directive for you, just a story of how you're working with the resurrection would be great too. You're only going to get about 3 minutes each. So it's about 10 minutes to talk. And then we'll come back and a few people will share what they heard. And then we'll worship some. Does that make enough sense? All right. See if you can do, you can move chairs, you can stand up, you can sit down, whatever. But just go circle three or four around you and see if you can answer one of those.